on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 96-year-old Alan Dunbar of Las Vegas, Nevada, originally from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. In the middle of December 1944, he found himself in the Schnee Eifel, a mountain range near Germany's western border with Belgium. A communications officer with the 106th Infantry Division, he would be wounded and captured at the outset of the Battle of the Bulge. Even though the Army Service Manual said a division should cover no more than 5 miles worth of front, the 106th was trying to take care of 26 miles of front, and two of the 106th's three regiments, the 422nd and 423rd, were surrounded and cut off. So, Mr. Dunbar, geographically speaking, that's where you were, near Schoenberg, and you were surrounded.
Geographically speaking, I was the top of the telegraph pole in the division headquarters.
All right.
And the tree next to me was my wire chief, and he yells over to me, "Captain, you ever see so many Indians?" I said, "What Indians?" He says, "I mean the Germans." I said, "You tell your men to get the hell out on the ground immediately. I don't want them to all get killed."
How close were the Germans?
I would say about 150, 200 yards from our command post.
Wow.
And they had artillery pieces out there, which the Germans normally don't have artillery pieces in their lower units. I didn't have any artillery. We had small weapons. We had pistols. We had rifles, grenades to throw.
So you're trying to establish communication lines for an upcoming battle, and all of a sudden the enemy's right on top of you.
Yeah. I had 48 men, and I had another lieutenant, and I had a warrant officer. And I knew every one of them by their first name.
Wow.
I felt a personal responsibility for each man. I had a wound. It creased my stomach. And I looked down and I says, "Oh my." Well, of course, I was a lot thinner than I had today. I only weighed about 120 pounds.
Whew.
127 pounds, to be exact.
So this was a shrapnel from an artillery shell that got you?
I thought it was came from a rifle.
Oh, yeah?
Because the firing of artillery shells explode.
Right.
Rifle shells don't explode.
Right.
They hit you. Either they go in your stomach or shoulder or whatever.
So this one went parallel to your stomach, went through, but didn't go in?
Didn't go in. Just creased me. I felt it. When I talked to the regimental commander, I says, "I think I've been hit." "What do you mean you think you've been hit?" he says to me. I says, "Well, I'm looking down at my shirt and it's red." So I says, "It wasn't red when I put it on." He says, "Alan," he says, "you're making fun of this war." I said, "No, I'm not, sir. I want the men to know that even if I got wounded, I still are giving the orders they're supposed to hear."
Right.
"I got to take care of my men, sir. Goodbye." I got a hold of my wire sergeant, and I said, "I want you to listen very carefully. The enemy, the Germans, outnumber us at least 2 to 3 to 1. Tell his men, the 23 men that he had in the wire section, to destroy their weapons, name, rank, serial number. That's all you have to give. Don't tell them where we were, where we came from. Name, rank, serial number, and get rid of everything." I told them to destroy all the things that would tell the enemy what you did.
You're wounded. You're given all these orders because it's clear to you you're going to be captured.
Yes.
There's no getting out of this because there's just that many Germans?
Yes. They had us outnumbered at least 3 to 1. The wire sergeant said, "Can I give you my rifle?" I said, "No. It's your weapon. Use it and then destroy it, because I don't want any weapons falling in the enemy's hands."
Right. Had you ever personally considered the possibility that you might be a prisoner?
Never gave it a thought. When I got captured, I was as bare as I hoped that the men were. I didn't have a weapon on me. I tore everything out of my wallet, buried my wallet. I had nothing on it to let the Germans know that I was the commanding officer of this unit.
You bury your dog tags too?
Buried my dog tags. Everything that identified me as an American soldier, I either buried, threw it under maybe a truck or something, and I took my pistol apart.
What I think might be an important question to ask here, did you receive an order to surrender?
They had a white flag.
Uh-huh.
They came over, and they said, in English, who is in charge? I said, I am. He says, I want you to surrender all your weapons and your ammunition. I says, it's been taken care of. He spoke some German words. He says, was is los? I said, nix is los. He says, you speak German? I says, no, I'm copying you. And my sergeant says to me, you're a character.
I guess so.
Captain, he says, I never heard a conversation like this in my whole life.
Well, and I'm sure it wasn't all laughs, though.
No, it wasn't all laughing.
What did they do with you guys?
Well, they separated me from my men.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like that at all.
They put you with other officers, and they took enlisted men with other enlisted men?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the thing about it, that was the last I saw of my enlisted men. You know, I was in prison camp, an officer's camp.
Were you in pain from the shot to your midsection?
I wasn't thinking about it. I was thinking about the men.
For you, with that wound, if it went crossways across the front of your stomach, had you been turned a little bit differently, that would have gone
in.
It would have gone in.
I would have died.
It would have killed you.
Yeah. A battle like that can be a game of chance. I felt lucky.
I imagine so. I know that you feel pretty fortunate to have survived, and that there's a man in particular that you feel helped save your life. And I want to get to that, but I want everyone to understand, because most people listening have no idea what it's like to be a prisoner, especially not of the Germans, in the winter of 44 and 45 and on into the spring. Was there anything about your interrogation that stood out to you?
Well, not my particular interrogation. It was the manner in which this man, Lieutenant Colonel John Waters, became a person of renown to me because he saved my life. We met at Oflag 64 in Poland.
This is where you were a prisoner. So this is, they've taken you there in one of those cattle cars, the 40 and 8s packing.
Yeah.
Three or four times as many people as should be in there.
181 officers are there.
Wow.
They were standing up.
So you're taken to Poland, and you're in this prison camp.
Right.
How was the food?
The food, they received German Red Cross parcels. The German guards, they would take all the food out, put it in one pile, mix it all up, and then they'd give it to the prisoners.
Hmm.
You couldn't eat it. It was like slop.
Ruined it.
Ruined it.
You must have lost a lot of weight.
I weighed 102 pounds when I was liberated.
Wow. I bet you ate some things that you never would have stomached before.
Oh, I told some of the prisoners, don't eat the slop. Now, I'm not blaming you if you eat it, because we're not getting anything to eat from the Germans.
Right.
Maybe some kartoffels or something, bread.
Was that the bread made out of sawdust?
Yeah. And then Colonel Waters, an enlisted man, comes up and he says, Captain, Colonel Waters wants to talk to you. So I knew Colonel Waters was head of the camp. He calls me in, and I was going to salute him. He says, no saluting in this camp. He says, I heard that you're a pretty good man. And I didn't say a word to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he said to me, how would you like to work for me in the camp? I said, I would like to do that, Colonel. He says, I want you to call me by my first name. I'm John Waters. And I knew who he was.
Did you know who his father-in-law was?
Yeah. I says, you happen to be General Patton's son-in-law? He says, yes. He says, how did you know? I says, well, I know the Patton family from before the war and during the war, and I was not impressed with his command ability. He looked at me and he says, well, why weren't you impressed? He was a three-star general. I said, yes, and they took one star away from him because of the way he treated the enlisted men who were wounded and in the hospital. So he says, oh, you're one of those guys. I said, yes. He says, well, he says, you and I are going to be good friends, I can see. He says, I don't like him either. I said, he's your father-in-law. He says, I think that you are an honest person. I want you to work for me. Oh, one other thing. My name is John, and you're Alan. That's what we're going to talk. No rank.
Right.
I said, yes, sir. He said, no, sir. He made rules as he went along. He made rules.
So what kind of work did he have you doing there in the camp?
He had me go around to the officers in the 422nd and the 423rd, the officers who were POWs, mm-hmm. and he wanted me to tell them he is doing everything possible to get them released and sent back to their families and the American troops.
What was the hardest thing about being a prisoner? What was the most challenging part of that for you?
The hardest thing in being a POW was the lack of freedom. When you're used to doing what you please most of the time, your freedom is so important to you, and your lack of communication with your family.
Did you ever hear from them in captivity?
The mail that they sent was either destroyed or the Germans just threw them away.
So you never knew whether or not your family knew you were alive.
That's right.
But did they?
Yeah.
They knew you were reported missing and reported captured?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They got it through the grapevine, I guess. I was working for this man.
For Waters, yeah.
Yeah. I had to report to him of everything I saw during the prisoner of war camp that I thought was wrong. Some of the prisoners were trying to escape without him knowing about it. That's not right.
Probably wasn't smart either.
Wasn't smart either. Of course, you get yourself killed.
Exactly.
That way.
Yeah. Did you ever, during those months of captivity, while you're starving, you're losing weight, did you ever think you were going to die there, that you wouldn't be free again?
I never thought about that.
Why not? What gave you hope?
Hope, because I was an American, and I felt that someday they would become better trained, and they would liberate either the camp or they would win the war.
Mm-hmm.
I never had any doubts in my mind that the Americans would win the war.
Well, and America and its allies certainly proved you're right. But in order to make it home, you had to regain your freedom first, and that was not a simple process. When we come back, some of the things he had to endure before his liberation came, and how he thinks we ought to view our freedom today. For photos of Mr. Dunbar then and now, pull up Hometown Heroes Radio on Facebook, and we'll hear the rest of his story right after this. If you are a World War II veteran and you have not been to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., Honor Flight wants to take you there, free of charge. The sooner you submit an application, the sooner Honor Flight can get you to your memorial. In Kern County, call Lily Marsh at 661-544-VETS. That's 661-544-VETS. For Fresno, Madera, Merced, Mariposa, Kings, or Tulare counties, check out CV Honor Flight. CV as in Central Valley, cvhonorflight.org, or call Al Perry at 559-970-9853. That's 559-970-9853. We all owe our freedom and liberty to the men and women who put their lives on the line for it. Let's all come together now behind Honor Flight and give our veterans one more tour with honor.